Hey guys, what's up?
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, we're out to a show.
Sorry, I'm just trying to be quick. I'm trying to move, you know, with alacrity.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. Let's do it.
So I'm Sean.
I'm Will.
Okay. Are we late for our guest or something like
no,
that?
No, it's just we got to get to the show. It's like people are waiting to get to the show, and then they got to get through this BS first. So like we're trying to get to the thing. It's smartless.
Go.
What if people are watching this at night and they're listening to it at night?
They're not watching anything.
They're listening.
What
to
if they want
to
relax?
Just fucking start the show. Terrible.
Welcome to Smart.
Smart.
Listener, Will's in a what we call a whisper booth in the biz, where he's got a sort of a fold-up, sort of a fabric closet that he can get, you know, he can do all his VO work remotely, wherever he is on the planet. For some reason, he's got a white stick, one that a person without sight might use.
Right. What is that for?
Go ahead, Will.
It's a light.
Oh, it's a light. For what?
It's a light.
To light yourself?
No, it's just like a light fixture that I don't use, and it's in the background. So sometimes you see this part, the white part of it, and it makes Jason crazy.
Not sometimes. Always.
And Sean, I don't know if you noticed, we had a meeting the other day, the three of us, with somebody else, right?
Yes.
And during the meeting, I saw it out of the corner of my eye, and I brought it into frame just because I knew it made Jason crazy.
Listen, it will, obviously. It is not your fault. You're doing nothing wrong. I'm just, it's more of a comment on how crazy I am.
Wow. This is unbelievable growth from you.
I hope we're recording this.
I kind of wish it wasn't a lamp. I wish it was something else, that you needed it to get something from off a high shelf or something.
Oh, right.
Maybe you were losing your sight and you just wanted to have the stick nearby in case it takes full hold
just
at
case,
some point.
Yeah. No. I mean, I'm blessing that. Well, sorry, Sean. I feel like you've got something you really need to talk about.
I really want to say, I really got some really great news.
Okay.
I got an antibodies test yesterday to see where I am with my antibodies. Off the charts.
Really?
Super strong antibodies. Did you guys get tested?
I did. I got tested recently.
You get tested all the time.
Yeah. No, but for your antibodies.
Is that a separate test?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I have been tested for antibodies.
It's good, right?
It was good. I mean, you've been vaccinated.
Makes me feel real safe.
Yeah, I'm vaccinated.
Yeah, Sean's vaccinated.
No, I know, but the antibodies are the next thing.
I vaccinated Sean.
Yeah.
Huh.
He doesn't trust anybody with a needle but me.
Right. And he does it. He comes over at night to put me to sleep with some extra something.
What is it, Will?
What's
it called? Go ahead. Let's get the rest out.
Okay.
You guys do that on a drip, or is it a tablet, or?
No, it's a drip. It's a drip.
Does he ever cook it up for you? And you can just kind of
spoon.
Yeah. Sometimes.
You guys are the worst.
You're the worst.
Yeah.
I miss you guys. I got to say, I really miss you guys.
I know. We haven't seen each other in
quite
a while.
I'm sorry. I miss you too. You guys are warming me up. I've come onto this episode in a bad mood this morning.
No, it's okay. Well, listen. I love you guys, and I'm happy that our guest today is some. I'm really excited.
Hopefully,
about
this guest is a ray of sunshine, can bring me from my.
Well, I can say he is. Now, I've never met this guy, but from what I know, he is a ray of sunshine.
Is that what it said on his breakdown when you swipe left?
That's what it's.
The first line in his profile.
That was
hello. I'm a ray of sunshine.
I'm a fan of this guy for a while now, and Jason, you're kind of responsible for it in a way, and you'll find out why in a second. And I'm so excited, and I kept asking, like, what is the day that he's coming on? What's the day he's coming on? Because I'm so excited. He's got great energy about him, which is one of the things I really liked when I was watching him do what he does, was his energy. But on top of that, he's really good at what he does. In fact, he's incredible, and I can't imagine doing what he does. Our friend is an Australian. He's from Down Under.
David Blaine.
No. he has won a number of big championships in what it is that he does.
Uh-oh.
He has been at the top of his game for 10 years since he moved from Australia to Europe to pursue becoming the world's greatest race car driver. He's won so many Grand Prix, including the Monaco Grand Prix. I don't want to wait any longer. Our guest is Daniel Ricciardo.
Oh, my God.
Formula One driver, Daniel.
Oh, my goodness.
Hello, Daniel.
This is a big star, you guys.
This is,
good Lord.
starstruck.
Wow. Oh,
Will, you must be. Will, do you have anything on underneath frame at all? It's just the shirt today, I'll bet, right?
It is.
Will's a big F1 fan listener.
Do you know each other from before this?
No. We've never met.
No.
Wow. Daniel, what a pleasure. Let me just start by saying, Daniel, welcome to SmartList. We're so excited to have you. It's a pleasure to meet you. How are you?
I'm very well. I'm very well, thanks.
This is awesome.
That was quite an intro, and I've got pressure on now. I'm supposed to be a ray of sunshine, so I'll give it my best.
Look at the smile. Look at the teeth and the smile.
I mean, what a great smile, you guys.
Your smile is incredible. It's the greatest smile in Formula One, potentially in all of sport.
So much so that you should be allowed to race without a helmet, just so we don't, so we can see it always going around the turn, smiling.
200 miles an hour.
Yeah, they love it. Smiling. Oh my God! So, what part of the world do we have you in, listener? If you're not familiar with Formula One, these rock stars travel around the world to do these races every other weekend. I want to say because they wouldn't be able to do it every weekend because the apparatus that they have to put on these, you know, big huge 747s. I think you get a 747 per team.
We're gonna find out.
But I mean, anyway. So, where are you in the world?
I'm in Monaco at the moment. So Monaco's like it's a little bit of a hub for
tax haven,
I guess, race car drivers and that. Yeah.
Any other athletes live there? Any other rich people looking to save a bit there?
There's a lot of cyclists and tennis players.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. And a lot of like German counts and stuff like that. So Daniel, so you're in Monaco. That's your home base. You grew up in Australia. You grew up in Perth, Australia, right? On the West Coast. And you got into, tell us a little bit about how you got in. How do you become a Formula One driver?
Yeah, I want to know everything.
From a person who is in Perth, Australia to Formula One. What was that trajectory? Like how old were you when you started, et cetera?
Yeah, it's absolutely one of the most weird sports.
Yeah.
So it basically started in go-karting.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
But it was more like, as a kid, like I just liked going fast. Like I loved the adrenaline of, even if it was like riding a push bike down a hill, like all that sort of stuff. I was just like, let me go fast because that's what I enjoy to do. And when I was, 8, 9 years old, I basically begged mum and dad to get me a go-kart. And at the time it was just to like, you know, maybe after school some days they'll take me down to the track and just let off some steam.
Uh-huh.
But let me ask you this. Even before that, because they all look like Hot Wheels, right? They all look like those little kind of cars that you race like at home. Did you ever play with those?
Oh, yeah. I was like a massive nerd for that sort of stuff.
So it went from that to go-karts. Okay.
Were you a kid, like when you were a baby? I'll tell you why I'm asking this. So my toddler, my son who's 14 months old, and I have two older boys. I've never seen anything like it. He's obsessed with his first word was car. He wakes up in the morning, he points to outside, he wants to go in the car, and I'm not joking. The last 2 weeks has been, I take him out and he wants to stand in the driver's seat and he holds onto the steering wheel and he's good for 25 minutes. And he says like four words. It's all he wants is to be in a car.
What was the second word?
Lawsuit.
Lawsuit,
strangely. Yeah.
So, Will, you're in trouble. Not for the lawsuit, for the car stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I kind of left out some information in the first part. Is so my dad loved cars. He raced a little bit, not professionally, but just as a hobby, I guess.
Sean, your dad was pretty good at driving pretty fast away from the home. Sorry.
Some say if you listen closely, you can hear
the engine receding.
Healing away.
Yeah. The screech carries. Yeah. Go ahead.
Even before I came on, I was just listening, obviously, and I could listen and just, I'm sure you guys have a lot of banter, let's say.
We're just such bored people with very, and too much caffeine in us.
The most boring, dumb people on the
planet. Three narcissists that like to hear their own voice. So please, your dad, we're not even letting you talk. Please go ahead.
So your dad was your dad was into racing a little bit, not professionally, and you were like, at an early age, you're like, let me upstage my dad. Go on, continue, your words.
Yeah, so I guess like the truth is, if he had the opportunity to race when he was young, I'm sure he would have. Like, it was his passion. And still to this day, like, he knows more about cars than I do. Like, he's the proper enthusiast. And loves doing it. I mean, yeah, I won't sell myself short. I grew up watching it on TV when I was...
You did, yeah.
Yeah, probably like your son at 2-3 years old. And it was like the noise. It was the... Yeah. And then if I'd go to the racetrack to watch Dad, it was the smell. Yeah. Like, there was so many kind of senses that I was just in love with.
Yeah. Jason, you like to sniff what we call sniff gasoline, right? That was
it's huffing, but
that's how he gets up in the morning.
Right. And then, Sean, and then there was alcohol, right? And then the sound of the door shutting and then the exhaust, you could smell the exhaust as it was receding.
And just a very distant, fuck you. Wait, so Daniel, you do go-karting, your parents take you out, all of a sudden, what age was it that people in Perth were like, you know, check this guy, he's going really, really fast, this guy should be going to Formula One? Like, what was that moment that people had that conversation
when they said crikey,
just like I did? Who said crikey first?
Yes.
Who said this bogan should be racing overseas?
Your accent's good. From when I was pretty much born, I had a passion for it and a love for it. But I think even through like my teenage years, so I was racing go-karts, but I wasn't, maybe I didn't have like massive self-confidence at that point. I was winning some races, but I wasn't like dominating the Australian scene, so to speak. I was one of like the guys, but not the one. So then I was kind of like, all right, if I'm not like dominating in Australia, how am I going to take it to Europe, where the real like hub is for motorsport, at least for Formula One related? So I basically got to, I was probably like 16, and I was really enjoying racing more than anything else I was doing. And at school, I wasn't really
focusing on your studies?
Sorry?
You weren't really focusing on your studies?
Well, I tried, kind of.
Yeah, sure.
You're looking at me really seriously.
Well, no. I mean, Jason, for Jason, his studies were in the back of a trailer on the Warner Brothers lot. So, like, that was, he understands
make sure you're in your key light and don't shadow the other actor and all that other stuff.
And, you know, lunchtime, you know, going into Grace, he understood all this stuff as part of his school experience.
Grace,
so you're not striving at school. You're 16. You're not the number one guy in Australia. Are you even the number one guy in Western Australia?
I was definitely up there. Like, I was in the group, and I guess long story short, I probably hit a point where I kind of just started like finishing school, 16, 17. And I kind of flipped a bit of a switch in terms of just like personal maturity. I kind of grew up, and I was quite like young, immature.
Oh, what's that like?
I'm still figuring it out.
How old are you now?
32.
Okay.
Yeah.
Same. And then I had kind of, there was a moment where I was like, all right, I'm going to go all in on this. And I did like a one-off race in Europe. And I think that was my fear was kind of thinking that the European guys were so much better, and I kind of had no chance. And I surprised myself when I did this race. I finished fifth out of, I don't know, probably 35.
Nice.
And it was kind of like the best of my age group at the time. And then that was like, all right. So I moved to Europe the following year and basically went all in.
You're one of those people. This is the heart of a champion. You needed more competition. You needed, because those, you weren't getting it. And look, this is not a slight to your countrymen down in Oz, but it kind of is. They weren't giving you the competition that you needed. You needed to go to the big leagues. And once you got there, that kind of, it kind of awoke something inside you. And you're like, oh, I can do this. And once you had that first taste of success, you probably never looked back a little bit in terms of confidence, right? I'm guessing.
Yeah, like 100%. That race gave me so much more because, like, for us, we put like Europe on a pedestal as far as the motor racing, and so when I was like, yeah, I was kind of convinced myself I could do it. So then when I moved to Europe, I was like, I was so disciplined, so strict, and a few other guys, whether they were from Australia or from other parts of the world, let's say not Europe.
Yeah,
there were some young kids who were kind of living. I was living in Italy at the time, and there was a few living there as well. There was like a training kind of facility. And yeah, like I could see the tendency, like, okay, we're away from family, away from our parents, we're 17 years old, and there was a bit of partying and this and that, and I was like, no. Nah.
I'm here to win.
Yeah, I don't know. As I said, I kind of flipped a switch, and yeah, that was the best
thing. I want to go back to, because you think I'm joking, but I'm not. I really, really, really do want to do one of those things where you buy like an hour around a racetrack or something. You know, you go to those mm-hmm. racetracks and you can mm-hmm. race yourself.
Sure.
I really do want to try that. What was that like the very, very first time? Did you do it at your dad's, where your dad raced? Like, did you get in a car by yourself and he said, okay, great, let's just try this? And what was that like?
So it's like the one word I'll associate racing with is freedom, mm-hmm. especially at a young age. You know, like you're controlling this machine, and even though like you got a helmet on, you know, you still get some of the mm-hmm. wind in your face, and it's yeah. like it's a free feeling, and that's what it was.
Talk yeah. to me about the euphoria of freedom and controlling that machine and gliding through the turns. You have to marry that with a management of fear too, because to really compete, you've got to sort of live on that sort of the limits of adhesion, right? Where the tire will sort of, you're pressing it too far and the tire loses adhesion to the road and you spin off and you'll hit the wall. You have to constantly feel that literally in your seat, where the car is and risk going just a little bit further, a little bit deeper into the turn, all that stuff. Are you just not worried about it? Tell me about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and by the way, Daniel, and Jason knows this because he actually won the Long Beach celebrity. He beat Richard yeah. Klein from Three's Company and Tony Katane in the qualifying. It was incredible. I don't know if you've seen the replay.
Anyway, I think you're actually right with those names.
He's done a little bit of racing himself.
Before gasoline was invented.
But what is that fear? Is that real?
So I'm not blowing smoke, but the way you put that forward was beautiful. Like I would
let him finish, guys.
I would have guessed you were an engineer or something. That was, how did you?
I started at Pirelli and then I discovered acting, but.
I'm confused because that was quite something.
Well, and I am always interested how you can tell when you drive with somebody, whether they are, when they're steering a car, whether they're trying to literally just stay in between the lanes. And so they're constantly adjusting the wheel to stay in the middle of the lane, where some people drive, they're looking much further down the road and they're just kind of generally going in that direction mm-hmm. and they're kind of gliding a little bit and they're kind of at one with the car. You can just see it just driving around on the streets. And is that kind of how you just kind of marry yourself to that seat and the whole car and you are one thing, or is it much more technical than that?
No, you've basically nailed it. That's really good awareness. So we have, you should fist pump.
Yeah, this is great.
I guess. I mean, what the fuck are you talking about? By the way, I know you live in Los Angeles part of the time. So next time, if you feel like some eyes burning in the back of your head, it's Jason watching you drive.
I just watch you. Yeah. Tell me what you do with that fear. What do you do with that fear? You just put it behind you because you can't win with it?
Yeah, pretty much. I think because, I mean, the first time you get into a go-kart, so for me, 8 years old, you're aware of already like the risk and the danger. And so that fear is something now that I've lived with my whole, let's say, racing career. And it's somewhere in the back. And I think sometimes like you need a little bit of that fear.
Let's access it today. Let's access the fear today. Let's get right in.
Will likes to make guests cry. What about when you're driving these really, really expensive cars? I mean, the go-karts were expensive at 8, I'm sure. But now you really have a good sense of what a dollar is worth. And these cars are multi-million dollar cars. You go into a turn and you get loose. There's hundreds of thousands of dollars of damage done on that car. What's that process like? I mean, obviously some crashes are assumed and there's a backup car and all that stuff. But the day after or the week after, is there ever like a little like, can we talk to you for a second? You know, the budget this year, you've crashed 4 times. It's cost us $14 million. Are you ever talked to about like your responsibility for the crashes and the money and all that stuff? Does that happen?
Fortunately, I don't do it often, so I haven't had that. But that sounds really like arrogant.
No, but does it happen? Do you hear about it in your industry that a driver will get pulled aside or be asked to leave a team because they're just costing them too much money?
Yeah, I think there's like the difference of being reckless,
mm-hmm.
and then there's the difference of exploring the limit. And I think a team will, especially in the early days, like a team will respect you for, okay, not crashing every weekend, but if you do have a crash every so often, but because you're testing the limit and really trying to get everything out of yourself in the car.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or that particular setup on the car with suspension or tires or whatever, they would go, oh, okay, you know, he's just trying to see where it goes.
Exactly.
Speaking of that, so what do you think about, and again, we can totally take this out, Daniel, but just what do you think about a couple of weeks ago, I think it was at Silverstone, when, you know, when Lewis made that move on Verstappen, and Verstappen ended up crashing out. Like, that was a very aggressive move by Lewis, and people calling him out and saying that he did not make the right move in that moment. Well, they're racing. In that moment, that's kind of what they're there to do. Do you agree with that, or do you think somebody was being too aggressive?
Let's get Sean's opinion first.
Well, I want to know if you want to know what race car backwards is.
Uh-oh, here we come.
Race car.
Yeah, thanks.
Hey.
Go ahead, answer Will's question.
What's that called? That's called a palindrome?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
That's all I was thinking about.
There's the part we'll cut out.
But it goes to sort of the crashing and stuff and being aggressive in those moments. And that was something that just happened the last couple of weeks. What do you think about aggressive driving like that in that particular moment?
So I'll go to that one and then I'll kind of talk about it in general. So that one was, you'd call it like a racing incident, I think, because so those two have been going at it all year. So they're currently fighting for the championship and they've been pushing the absolute edge with each other. And it was kind of, I feel everyone felt like it was inevitable at some point. We got 20 something races this year. At some point they're going to have a moment. So I think that was it. And it all obviously happened so quick. I mean, we've been doing it our whole life, so we need to be able to, let's say, cope with it. But yeah, there's a lot of, especially the first lap of the race, which it was, that's like the most intense lap of the race. You know, you've got the start, you've got all kind of like the energy and the atmosphere of the crowd.
You
got
to get through that first turn, right, Sean?
Yeah, you got to really pull it tight around
Sean,
the corner.
Sean, you got to understand too, like for Daniel, I don't want to speak for you, but so Daniel, he came up with a Toro Rosso, which is owned by Red Bull, and then became a Red Bull driver for a number of years and had success. In fact, won Monaco and a bunch of other races under driving for the Red Bull team. And then he moved, and now he races for McLaren. So he has a history with those guys and with Max Verstappen. So there's like, you guys all know each other. You guys have been racing against each other. Like, there's a lot of, it's like being in a big, huge extended family in a way, I bet, right?
It is. And there's only, I mean, there's 20 of us in the world. Like, there's 20 F1 drivers per year.
That's it.
That's crazy.
Maybe a couple seats will get changed each year, you know? So like you are spending a lot of time with kind of the current group. And yeah, you get to obviously, know each other a bit and this and that. But I think being like over aggressive and all of that sort of stuff, like that was actually one of my, let's say, weaknesses or downfalls kind of growing up. And when I got to Formula One, is I was kind of intimidated just by being there and who I was racing against. And I wasn't aggressive enough. And I got kind of mauled, a few times, and it was kind of like, yeah, if I qualify well, that's nothing if I'm just going to get eaten up on Sunday in the race. So, you know, I then certainly switched my mentality to it all. And again, I think a team will always respect you for having a go, as opposed to, you know, like, this isn't the sport to sit back and be complacent.
Mm-hmm.
And now a word from our sponsors.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/smartlist to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/smartlist. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Get to the chopper. I'll be back. Listen, I gotta tell ya, of all guests we've had on SmartList, I don't know if we've had a bigger icon on our podcast than Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean, what a treat it was talking to that guy. Arnold is an inspiration, from having reached the heights of bodybuilding to then conquer Hollywood and become a global movie star. Oh, and for his third act, he oversaw the world's fifth largest economy as governor of California. The man has truly done it all. In our interview, he shares the secret of how he's able to accomplish what he puts his mind to, what motivates him to keep working out all these years, and the extreme generosity that he received after arriving in America. You gotta listen to this episode to hear what it's like to be Chris Pratt's father-in-law and how Arnold's first comedy, Twins, has made him more money than any other film he's done. Hint, he's also a great businessman. Give it a listen if you haven't. Bye. Seps. Hey, listener, it's Jason Bateman. You know him for putting his body on the line in Jackass, but now Johnny Knoxville's bringing you the wildest stories from the bravest folks he knows on his new podcast, Pretty Sure I Can Fly. His new podcast, in collaboration with us here at SmartList Media, also features longtime This American Life contributor Elna Baker as his co-host. Together, they have incredible firsthand accounts from folks who surf 100-foot waves, ride 600-mile-per-hour rocket sleds, and wrestle crocodiles for fun. On Pretty Sure I Can Fly, Johnny and Elna bring you personal stories from unsung heroes that are part comedy, part adrenaline, and all heart. These are the inspirational hold my beer stories that will make you want to grab the bull by the horns, literally and figuratively. Follow Pretty Sure I Can Fly on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Pretty Sure I Can Fly early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
When I was a kid, I would watch race car driving. My brother Mike loves racing. Used to, for his birthday, I would buy him, like, you know, racing around the tracks and stuff. He lives for it. Lived for it. He passed away, but hold for laughs. And so,
wow.
No, he's great. He would have laughed at that.
Your dad didn't run him over with the car leaving.
No. He didn't. He's since, he was a great brother. I love him very much. But he loved race car driving. And but when I was a kid, I was like,
I don't know you well enough to
Daniel,
know
it's to okay do, yeah. to laugh because okay. otherwise you'll cry.
Oh, please laugh.
Yes, he would love us talking about him. He would love us laughing about him. He was the best brother ever.
God rest his soul.
Okay, so anyway, when I was a kid, he would make me watch race car driving. I was like, as a kid, I don't get it. They push the gas and they go around. What's the skill? Right? And I've heard other people say that. Of course, now that I'm older and I understand it, there's tremendous skill about it. Mm. There's tremendous talent behind it. Mm. But what do you say to those people who don't quite understand that it's way more than that? Like, especially kids who can't understand it.
Yeah, and even, I guess even like grown ups, like I'm not mad about it. And because it's simple, like no one can really do it in terms of, like even me, if I wanted to drive my F1 car today, I couldn't. Like it's, you know, so no one can really relate, because it's just, racing is such a niche thing. And, you know, like we can run around on a basketball court and understand that that is a physical sport. You know, like we can do it and understand the stresses on your body.
Sean,
and
that's the one with the hoop and the net.
Oh, got it. Let me write that down.
I tried to use like an American sport, I guess.
Sure.
But yeah, but racing, you know, like if they watch us on TV, it's like, well, yeah, I drive my car to work every day, so it's kind of the same, just faster. But
what kind of car do you drive to work every day?
Well, now it's a McLaren, which I'm pretty excited about. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's nice.
Now, you can't really open that thing up in Monaco, right? I mean, the fastest anybody drives on those streets is when they close it off for that race. And even when that racetrack is all set up, it's very hard to pass on that track, really any track that you guys are on. Because, listener, Formula One is all road courses. So you're turning left, you're turning right, you know, whereas like NASCAR is a big circle or an oval. And mm-hmm. one might think that a driver would get dizzy because they're just going around a circle. And it's much easier to pass in that situation.
And Sean, just so you know, so by the way, I came to know you, Daniel, I think in a way that a lot of other, especially North American viewers, got to know you was on the Netflix show.
13 Reasons Why?
13 Reasons Why I Drive.
Drive to Survive.
Drive to Survive.
Drive to Survive.
Drive to Survive. And so and by the way, you're the most personable guy on in Formula One by a long shot. And I don't want to get into naming names, but there are some real duds out there. And
There is.
Yeah, there. Oh my God. It must be, God, you have to suffer some of these fools. And there's some really cool guys. You know who I like a lot? And tell me if I'm wrong. I like that guy, Toto, who runs Mercedes.
Yeah.
He seems like a really cool character, right? He's a cool guy.
He's cool. He's definitely got a presence.
Yeah.
But he's, I would say, very, very good at what he does.
How much socializing is there between teams? Like when you guys get to a destination, are teams, are drivers hanging out and going to dinner and stuff like that? Or does everyone kind of stay with their own team for the most part?
Yeah, not much. Like maybe after a race, if we're staying there the Sunday night for whatever, and there might be like a call it a party or something, like you might end up having a drink with another driver. But it's funny. It's a very individual sport.
Yeah. Right.
Yet it's not, because our team, like McLaren, has two cars.
Yeah.
And there's probably 800 people as part of that team itself. Wow. So it's...
You and Lando Norris, for instance, who's the other driver for McLaren this year, do you guys spend a lot of time together?
No. Away from the track, no.
No.
And I imagine that's common, right? Most drivers, even if you're on the same team, don't really hang out with one another, yeah?
You just end up kind of staying to your... I say stay to yourself. Like, I do get on with other drivers, but it's...
You're talking your mechanics and your team, the rest of your team that's, yeah?
Yeah, so on a race weekend, yeah, if we were to go out for dinner, it's, yeah, you kind of take like your mechanics and your, you know, your race engineers to dinner. Sure. And then I'll have like my little kind of personal crew, whether it's my trainer and my agent or whatever.
Oh, nice. You got like an F1 entourage.
Sure.
I want to go back to the 800 people. There's 800 people per team.
Is that Sean, you can't believe the apparatus.
It's wild.
But why so many people? Like, what do they do?
It's so, there's like...
I mean, you don't have to tell me what each one of them does.
Yeah, you need them all to travel to each one of these. Talk to us about how that, like, is there a plane? Is there a 747, like a air transport thing where you put all the cars on it? The touring bus that you need in the paddock, like how do you get everything all over the world?
I guess like within Europe, you guys can drive around in trucks, but if you're going from Hungary and then you've got to go to Australia, how does that happen?
So that's all through flight, and I'm pretty sure DHL's been like a partner of F1 for years and years, so they that's all managed through them. But
so each team doesn't have their own cargo transport plane. You guys kind of sub that out with these,
I believe so,
bigger cargo carriers.
I believe so. I should probably know, but yeah, I'm pretty sure. But like, so after a race, the cars will get like stripped down, put into big containers.
Oh, all right.
And then away they go. At a race weekend, there's a limited amount of personnel per team. So I think it's roughly maybe 80 that will travel, like part of the traveling circus per team. But then, yeah, at the factory, there's aerodynamicists, there's strategy engineers, like it's wild. And then because it's a business.
The only track we have here in the U.S. is in Austin, right? In Texas?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that we're going to Miami next year as well.
Are you going to Miami? Oh, that'll be cool. Fun. I can't wait to be there as your guest, Daniel. So
that was so nice of you, Daniel. Thank you.
Listen, I'm going to be in the pit. You need me in the pit. I don't know.
I've been in the pit during a couple of Formula One races.
Really?
Back in the day. It's so nerve-wracking because, at least for me, I just felt like there are certain things you can't see. As a guest, you get inside the garages, like there's private stuff in there about the way they set stuff up. And so you're afraid you might look at the wrong thing. It's so
pictures
loud.
Pictures and stuff?
Yeah, there's little pictures. I was buddies with Jacques Villeneuve for a half a second. And
he invited
me and my buddy to the race in Germany, the race in Monaco.
So you've done a few. Nice.
A couple of, yeah, it's, I actually, the only time I've ever been arrested, I was picked up on the incline, in Monaco.
I
was knocked out and, was woken up by a cop picking me up off the ground in the middle of the night on the
Why
incline.
Were you knocked out? What happened?
Like a dream.
Did I not tell you this story?
No. Well, I mean, let's tell everybody.
Well, it's just us, right?
Yeah.
I was overserved in the casino, in the Grand Casino. I don't know.
Overserved.
Yeah. I mean, it's completely irresponsible of them. But so I'm gambling.
Sir, are you sure that you would like another? You've had 30 drinks already.
So I'm gambling like I think I'm James Bond, and I'm winning all these large, like, rectangular chips, and I'm in a leopard suit. You heard me?
Are you?
I'm in a leopard.
Shirt and tie or T-shirt?
No, there's no tie. It's wide open down to the navel, and okay. This leopard suit made by Costume Nationale. I mean, it was okay. Super douche level was super high for me. I was 20 maybe, I think.
What year was this? Because it's kind of relevant.
It was like, let's see, if I was 20, it was 89. Hello, math. Or 90, 91, wow. Something like that.
Yeah.
I was born in 89. Does that make you feel old?
We're in a
yeah,
fight.
Yeah, it should.
So I'm all banged up, and it's 4 in the morning, and I need a ride back to my my hotel, which is just outside the city, and I can't find a cab. So I walk by this newspaper truck, local newspaper truck. There's stuff in the newspaper boxes because it's 4 in the morning with today's new paper. And I say to these guys in English, because I don't know French, where are you guys headed? Can I get a ride to my hotel? And of course, they looked at me like one might, you know, with not much of a response. They just kind of ignored me. So of course, that upset me because, as I said, I'm banged up.
That's not you, though. That's a French thing.
Yeah, but he's also
I mean, come on. A drunk American asking some guys filling up a newspaper box for a ride? Come on. So they told me to get lost. And as I walk by their truck, I just kind of smack the side of their panel truck, you uh-oh. Know, just out of frustration.
Mon Dieu.
Yeah. Next thing I know, I'm waking up, but everything's sideways because I realize I'm on my side on the incline. They knocked me out, I guess, because they're pissed off at me. And it's a van that rolls up into my vision, and the side door opens up. It's like a Wes Anderson movie. And a cop gets out of the van, because it's a cop van. And I go, oh, this is so great. You guys are going to be able to take me to my hotel. They pull me in. They say, you can't be drunk in Monaco. They take me to jail. They put me in the drunk tank, one of the most beautiful rooms I've ever seen, by the way.
Be drunk in Monaco sounds like a Pet Shop Boys song.
There's a beautiful sort of Angora Pashmina sitting there in the drunk tank. For me to keep myself warm. I wake up in the morning to the sound of qualifying, because the little, you know, jail, the little cop station's right there near the pits. And so that was the engines wake me up, and I've broken the heel on my shoe. Okay, so with this
you're wearing
leopard
heels.
Suit, yeah, it's sort of like
you should have mentioned you're wearing leopards and leopard skin and heels,
platform groovy shoes. I mean, I don't know. So I've got the extra heel or the broken heel in my pocket along with the chips, and the cops want to know if I want to file charges because I have a dislocated shoulder. And,
against yourself.
Yeah, that's what I realized.
For looking that way?
That's basically, they said, okay, so you're sure you want to file charges because, you know, you're in violation of being, you know, drunk in public or whatever. And I just said, screw it. And I kind of got in a cab and got home and nursed my hangover and my dislocated shoulder. But that's the only time I've been arrested in Monaco.
Daniel, thank you for coming today.
Yeah, Daniel, thanks so much to hear that, Jason's story of debauchery. It's one of many. So, Daniel, you won Monaco in 2018.
You know your stuff.
That's pretty good, right? How great was that feeling? Winning Monaco is because it's the most famous.
That's the granddaddy
of the grand, right? Isn't it?
It is like the let's say the ultimate is the world title. That's obviously what you want. And if you don't get that, or let's say a runner up to a world title is winning Monaco. It's like the crown jewel, and it's even from. I mean, the circuit is so intense and it's so tight and it's so easy to crash there, basically. So kind of like putting it together on that weekend and then with the kind of just the aura of Monaco. And I like 2018 was special because 2 years before that in 2016, I was leading and we had a slow pit stop. And then Lewis passed me during my pit stop and he ended up winning the race. So I was so dark after that because it's not often, obviously, you get a chance to win Monaco, and it was obviously a childhood dream. And
what does dark look like for you? I mean, is it just, you're just hitting the bong every day and watching cartoons? Like, it's just...
Are you a huffer like me?
Yeah.
Or do you climb into the Krispy Kremes like Sean?
Yeah.
Hey, they're good. For my levels of dark, it was dark. But it was actually funny because the 2016 year, let's say the dark year.
Sure.
On the podium, I was dark, call it, and I wasn't smiling. And all the things that were kind of said about me after that weekend, other than like how unlucky I was, oh my God, like Ricardo can, he actually can get mad. He can get angry because everyone just knows me for obviously just smiling and obviously loving it and having a good time. But it was just funny that I think everyone just thought like, I don't have the ability to feel hurt or anger. And
they were like, uh-oh, somebody poked the bear. Here he comes. And you did.
Yeah.
Well, I want to know something. Like, I don't know anything about you personally. Did you have somebody to celebrate your win with? Are you married? Do you have a girlfriend? Do you have children?
Easy, Sean.
Sorry.
So I don't, I'm not married, no kids. I was very fortunate because 2018, the year I won, I had mum and dad there. I had some of like my best mates there who were kind of obviously there to see me, but also like coincidentally doing a bit of a Europe trip at the time. So
Oh, the Aussies love to get around the world, don't they?
Oh, yeah.
They love, coming soon to a bar near you, drunk Aussies. I mean, am I right?
I know. I
love them, though. I love Aussies.
I love hate.
I as a Canadian, I love you Aussies.
Yeah, Americans love Aussies, yeah.
I do. I love Aussies, and I love Australia. I've been a number of times. I think it's an awesome, awesome place. So you've got all your friends over there. You've got mom and dad, but you've got no significant other.
No.
Have you ever been in a relationship is what Sean wants to know.
Yeah.
I have. And I think like long story short, it is hard.
Yeah, I bet with the schedule, yeah.
The schedule and you kind of need it for the sport, but it kind of teaches you to be selfish, you know, like you have to kind of go all in to like your own basket.
Yeah.
And even like I'll notice, even like with family or friends, because Formula One is so intense and everything's like so strict on time. And if a mate is late for dinner by like 10 minutes, I'm pissed. I'm like, mate, you've wasted 10 minutes of my time. So things of like that I've kind of grown with the sport, I do resent in like my personal life, but it's kind of a necessary evil, if you will.
Yeah.
But you do have self-care in the sense that like I notice, you know, you live in Monaco. And I guess you spend a lot of time over in the UK because that's where McLaren is based. So you must go back and forth quite a bit to the UK. Is that right? I'm guessing.
Yes. And so Dax said you are an Anglophile.
What?
Which I had to look up what that meant.
No, you misheard it. He said asshole.
Dax said that about me?
He said you're an Anglophile, which is that someone who like wants to be British or something like that?
Something like that. But it just has a great deal of sort of reverence for. And I'd say guilty as charged. And I love that Dax said that because it always makes Dax laugh. Because every time I'll mention like, oh yeah, I was with my friend, they go, let me guess, your bunny's from London, you know? Oh, Barney's always got, because he calls me Barney.
Will's Dax impression is
pretty, it's so good, right?
Yeah, it is good. Wait, do you know, like in other sports, Daniel, the like in football and stuff, people, there is a ceiling of when you reach a certain age. Is that true in your sport as well? Do people age out or are there people of a certain age still doing it?
I would say it's uncommon to go like beyond 40.
Yeah. I wonder why that is because
reaction time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, is reaction that true? Time.
I would say it's got to do with maybe some, like reflexes and that.
And you can't be a fatty either, right? You got to fit in those small cars.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Oh, here we go.
Let's talk to me about how you manage your water weight and everything. What do you drink a lot of electrolytes or?
It's very like, as soon as we like tell someone how much we lose during a race, just through sweat and obviously fluids, it's, everyone's like, I need to become an F1 driver. Yeah. I need to lose weight in 2 hours.
What are you good for about?
By the way, you're about to make Bateman cry when you tell him how much you lose.
Let me guess. You drop between 5 to 10 pounds in water weight per race.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Is that true?
I would say on average around like 2.5 kilos, which is, what's that, like maybe 7 pounds?
Sure.
Wait, how do you do that? How do you sweat do it so quickly?
From sweat, dude.
Oh, just sweat. Okay.
Yeah.
Is there any way we could just put Jason's face in an F1 car? Could we just do that just so it could lose?
I could take 2 to 3 kilos out of my face right now. It'd be great.
I can only see like
just my
breasts. Basically from breasts above. It looks okay from here.
They shouldn't be breasts. They should be pectorals.
Let's start there.
Yeah. What I'm going to do here is I'm going to just tilt my camera up.
Oh, no. There's the angel. Oh. Look at the sweet angel. Wait, so what I was going to say before was, so you spent a lot of time in the UK, but then, because you go back and forth, and fuck Dax, but then you also live in Los Angeles part of the time. You own a house in Los Angeles, quite near all of us, I think. Not that I've Googled, but I have.
Weird.
And it is. And I think we're practically neighbors, Daniel.
What's in the garage over there?
Yeah, that's what I was going to... That was my next question.
Uh-huh. What's your LA car?
So being the bogan Australian that I am, yeah. We call them utes back home, but because we don't really have anything big enough to call a truck. So when I got my place in the States, I was like, first thing I'm buying is a Raptor. So I have a Raptor.
Uh-huh. This is the most disappointing thing you said. First of all, it's so Inland Empire of you, first of all, A.
GMC contract is safe, Will.
Let me just say this. Friends don't let friends drive Fords. You know, GMC.
Oh, Lord.
GMC Sierra is a tremendous vehicle.
Is this a plug? Yeah.
Will's been doing the commercials for GMC for, what is it, Will? 25 years?
22, coming up on 23 years, I've been the voice of GMC trucks.
And are they professional grade?
Well, they are professional grade, Jason. Good. Thank you just for checking. Asking. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, he's so, the guy.
It's look a look great,
at Daniel, I'm seeing, this is the first moment I've seen Daniel's face respect you, Will, right there.
Yeah.
It just was like, oh, wait, my God.
I'm going to drive over to your house in a brand new GMC Yukon XL Denali, Daniel, and I am going to make a convert out of you. Wait, so you spend time in Los Angeles. My point was this. That kind of must be for you the real getaway because Formula One is not huge in California. In Australia, I imagine you're a bit of a superstar, and Australia loves you and they've embraced you. When you're in Europe, everybody watches Formula One, and so that you're getting, not harassed, but like you're Daniel Ricciardo, F1 champion driver. You come to Los Angeles, it's kind of you get to have a little...
You can walk around.
Yeah, you can walk around and kind of have a life, right? Am I right with that?
I'm blushing now. But anyways, LA, like, you're right. Like, there's two main reasons. Like, F1 is not very existent there, so you kind of can... It's more for me as well to, like, mentally get away from the sport and switch off. And I'm not surrounded by F1 people or F1 enthusiasts. So it is, like, a good escape. And then it also reminds me a lot of home. You know, it is like...
Yeah, a lot of Aussies say that.
We've got the weather, we've got the beaches. It's,
right.
Yeah, it's like a bigger version of home. So there's like, I won't lie, like there's a bit more to do there. So it's entertaining for me, but I can also just kind of switch off and lay low if I like as well.
Sure.
And now a word from our sponsors.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity, that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
What's the workout like? What's the keeping in shape like for Formula One? Is it how you know? I'm kind of the guy, you know, on this podcast. I'm kind of the workout guy. I'm the guy who's known for the workout
so he's
stuff.
Pushing weight around.
He's constipated right now, but
you can tell.
I could see your pectorals and not
there
your
it is.
Thank you. Yeah. Oh no, Jason got breasts and I got pectorals.
You sure do. Yep.
So hurtful. Mm-hmm. So wait, but in all seriousness, what is that? What is that like in terms of?
Cause
you have
pasties.
To be in great. You've got to be in great shape. Jesus, you've got to be in great shape to do that. And we talked about losing all that water weight. I mean, it's demanding physically, isn't it? In being in those cars, just doing one race.
So there's a few challenges to come with. Let's say like the physical demand of the sport is that it's a lightweight sport. So I think in the perfect circumstances, we would be like a lot heavier than what we are in terms of just, I think we'd love to put on more muscle if we could. And why we need the muscle is basically for the G forces.
Right.
So like Silverstone, for example, the track in England, through some parts of the circuit, we're pulling like 5.5, so 5.5 Gs through the corner. Like it's wild. So
is that because of the speed of the turn or the fact that the turn is so flat that there's no sort of banking that can offset the Gs?
It's mainly the speed of the turn. So there's several corners where seventh, eighth gear, so that there's eight gears in an F1 car. Mm-hmm. And So like one of them or two of them are eighth, and it's, I don't know, like whatever, 190 mile an hour through some of these corners. And so we need like a lot of strength through our neck, our core.
Don't need a lot of leg strength though, do you? Do you ever work your legs?
So like our right leg, not crazy for the accelerator, but for the brake, I think if anyone got to drive an F1 car, probably the biggest thing they'd say is how hard you have to smash the brake pedal.
Oh wow, really?
Really?
To get like performance out of it.
Wow.
Yeah, it's mainly like, yeah, I guess glute and calf. Like, so we do like some stuff for that. But again, we kind of have to do all endurance based.
I feel like I could do okay with that because I've got a pro. I've been described as having a pro dumper, and so like I have a lot of glute strength.
You sure do.
I mean? Like I'm tough to get off the puck because I have this pro dumper that I kind of get. So I'm just
No, we got it. So the you know what they teach you is to drive with one foot. You know, unless you're driving a stick shift and you got to work the clutch with the left foot. You guys don't have a clutch, yet you're still using the left foot for the brake. I think you guys are doing it wrong. I think it's unsafe.
Tell them what to do.
Yeah, no, just use just the right foot. So you're either on the gas, or if you need to come off the gas and get on the brake, you still use the right foot.
They probably haven't even thought of that.
You know, it's just safer.
Okay, so.
Yeah. Now, do you miss a clutch?
No, let him tell you why they don't, Jason. Let him tell you.
I want to know really.
Anything.
It's here, explain the mistake.
It's okay. So actually in a road car, I will do right foot braking. And I think because there's also like a lack of urgency on the road, you know, so you've got time to get off the throttle, get on the brake, where in racing, we nearly overlap. You know, like as soon as we come off the throttle, we're smashing the brake.
Gotcha.
And also the steering column runs right down the middle, kind of in between our legs.
Yeah.
So to get our right foot across, I don't even know if it's physically possible.
I gotcha.
And then you've got all the buttons on the steering wheel. Those are all the shifting the gears and shit?
Yeah. So we do have a clutch, but it's on the steering wheel. So it's like a hand clutch.
So you're engaging the clutch as you change the gears or no? Don't you just, isn't it on demand?
For the start. So just to take off, we use the clutch.
Okay.
And then it's all just, we can like flat shift.
I want to know, when you said you go to Los Angeles and you to chill out and everything, do you like the breaks in between races? Or are you just constantly thinking about it, waiting to get back and you love it so much? Or does your brain need the break from constantly going?
I think I've always had, like, yes, racing's my passion, but I've always loved just other things as well. Like I don't live and breathe it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I do enjoy breaks. I do enjoy doing other stuff.
What do you like doing?
What do you like to do? What do you like?
Where can Sean take you next time you're in LA?
Yeah, that's a great question.
So
you like tapas?
I love sports. I'm a big sports fan. So like just seeing live sport makes me happy. And live music.
Ice hockey.
I love music.
Jack.
Wait. Did you say ice hockey? You like ice hockey?
You know what? I have not been, but I would love to go to a game.
Well, done. Consider it done.
Okay. So you guys F1 and then I'll be a guest at ice hockey.
I think he just told us to fuck off, didn't he?
Wait, what?
No. So you guys, FO, I'm pretty sure that's what you said. Can we rewind that real quick?
F1.
Okay, so now listen. So you like watching sports. You like...
You're a gamer. I assume you're a gamer.
No.
Oh, really?
No. You'd be good at gaming.
Yeah, but I'm the kind of cooler generation. Yeah, like, I'm a bit past that. Yeah. So I'm all you guys on that level.
Sure.
No, don't misunderstand Will. He's got a headset probably just out of frame ready
why
for
did
some
you
Call
tell
of Duty.
Him? Why did you tell him we're just becoming best friends? He
tell
and I are about
handle.
To be better
him
friends
to,
than him and Dax.
Tell him where to find you. You know, what's your handle?
Are you a gamer? Is this like?
I'm a little bit of a gamer. It should be noted. For a guy who's 51, who has very little gray hair, I might add, and probably looks at like more like 32. You're looking at me like, hey, we're the same age or whatever.
I'm surprised.
I know.
Did you say 31?
Thank you so much, Daniel. We've noted that, and that is on the record officially.
We just cut our teaser.
So you don't game. You like to watch sports. You like to play sports. You like to play basketball, right? I know that you like to sort of keep active in that way. Are you like a big movie guy? What do? You have so many.
How do you fill your day?
You travel all the time.
I love playing sports. But on the movie thing, it reminded me of some of my like core friends from back home in Perth, like some childhood friends. I won't see them for like a year. Like I'll get home for Christmas and they're pretty good. Like they know not to like pest me with racing questions and they don't really care too much either. And we will like sit around a table and have a few drinks, and for hours, our conversation is just movie dialogue. It's just movie quotes, and it's the most immature conversation.
That
reminded me very much of what a lot of.
What have you loved lately that's come out? Because I'd start like imagining that you guys would be laughing about some comedies that come out. I mean, to you, Will and to Sean too. Like, what? Has there been like a great comedy film that's come out for a while?
Game Night. Game Night was hilarious.
By the way, Jason, there your movie is. Game Night.
Bingo. I'm fishing for. Thanks. We can move on.
I'm actually being totally honest.
It's a great.
I'm being totally truthful. That is one of the last times I laughed out loud in a movie.
I agree.
Those guys did a great job with that.
Game Night, when it came out a couple years ago, I've told you it's so good. And I say this to Jason all the time. I want him to do more pure comedies because he is the funniest dude. And it's one of the only nice things I'll say about him today. Yeah. But the other thing is, have you guys seen, and I told him this when I saw it, and I watched it again last night with my kids, and I shouldn't have. It's a little irresponsible. I watched Palm Springs with my kids. Have you guys seen that Andy Samberg's movie from last year?
It didn't Bennett's brother direct that and write it?
And our friend Bennett's brother directed it. Max Barbacow directed it. It is a brilliant
That's
movie.
What I've
heard. It's so funny. Daniel, watch this movie, Palm Springs with Andy Samberg.
Yeah.
It's a phenomenal movie.
That'll give me a nice little California fix watching that. So
you will love it.
Speaking of Samberg, so that reminds me of Hot Rod. So one of like the worst lines ever that I'll randomly say at times is boom, there's the flavor.
Yeah. Is that a Will Arnett line? Will, are you in that?
Yeah, this is a Will Arnett line.
You say boom, there's the flavor?
Yeah.
All my friends will look at me and it's so random.
Give Daniel a quick live reading of that right now.
I don't do it as well.
Just 3-2.
And action.
There's the flavor.
Oh, there you go.
Sully, you chode.
What do you say? I gotta kick you in the nuts or something.
Sully, I say, what do I say? I think I owe you a nut shot. I did that movie with Samberg and those guys, the Lonely Island guys, and I Kiva directed it and Yorma's in it, and I went up to shoot in Vancouver and I got a really bad cold on the way up there, and so I was on cold medicine for the few days that I was there. I barely remember being there. I was on so much cold medicine. And so I did all of that stuff, like even that when I'm yelling out all that, babe, 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 I was just doing it to make those guys laugh. And also, I guess I was just in some kind of other, I was high, I guess, on cold medicine.
Well, Jesus, well, hang on a second. I mean, what were you on, like Robitussin or Theraflu? Like, this doesn't get us high.
Yeah. I was on a thing that was called Crystal Methamphetamine.
Yeah, there we go.
Crystal Meth.
I'm going to have a little side chat with you after this session.
Crystal. Oh, Daniel.
Daniel, we have taken up way too much of your time. I got to say, I'm just such a fan of how you hold yourself. I've been watching you go from Red Bull to Renault, and then now you're with McLaren, and you've just always, truly always have a smile on your face in the best way. You had a great week. You had a great race at Silverstone. Your fifth place was great. I feel like you're just... you're coming back into your own. And you're such a great dude and an awesome driver to watch. And it's been such a pleasure to meet you.
Yeah, such a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you for coming on.
Yeah.
Very, very nice.
Thanks. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was good to meet you all as well.
You too.
Wait. Last question is, so you and Dax are friends? I got to get to the bottom of this.
So I went on his podcast last year. And one other thing, I love his bikes. I love motorbikes.
He loves motorbikes.
Yeah. So we kind of hit it off through talking bikes. And then, when I actually couldn't get home for Christmas because of the quarantine and all the craziness with Australia. So I spent Christmas in LA and we caught up and we went riding and stuff. So we hit it off like two school kids.
Yeah. He loves that stuff. He's the best. He's a friend of all of ours. And he was our first guest that we had on our podcast because we love him so much. And so I get it. Two good guys having fun on motocross. That none of us do, so we can't join you on that. But anyway, what a pleasure, man. Thank you for coming by, and I wish you all the success, and can't wait to see you in Miami. The three of us are going to be there with you in Miami.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to that. Yes. We'll call you once you're down there, or should we call you beforehand? And
when we land, we'll text you when we land.
You just send the laminates over to the hotel. Okay, great.
I was going to offer to pick you up in the jet on the way. It's a detour, but I can do that.
That sounds better.
Even better. Even better. We love jets. We love jets.
All right. Well, you go get your thoughts together. You still got time to hit the casino tonight, I'll bet. Make sure you arrange transportation before you get in there. A pleasure talking to you, my friend.
Thanks, Daniel. Such a pleasure.
Best of luck the rest of the season.
Thank you. It was, likewise. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I hope you guys are enjoying it as well.
We are.
This is all relatively new for you, right?
It is.
About a year, yeah.
We are loving Formula One. It's amazing and it's so good. And I'm rooting for you every single week.
Thank you.
Keep it going. All right, pal.
We'll see you guys soon. Thank you.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
Cheers. Bye, bye, bye.
Bye.
See ya.
Will, a very classy booking there.
Right?
Yeah. Really cool. I know nothing about it. I really, really, really do want to try what he does once. I really want to do that racetrack thing where you go, right? I'd probably be
sure.
Going
we'll
like
go to
40
Monaco,
miles
just
an
show
hour.
Up and just say, hey, can I pop in?
There's a place in Atlanta I can take you to, or even in LA. Yeah, we can go up to Willow Springs.
I really do want to do that.
Yeah, you should. It's a really fun thing to do. Or just do that Toyota Grand Prix of Long Beach.
Do they still do it?
I think they do. I think I'd love to do that again. We should do that. I'll do that together.
All jokes aside, you know that Jason's won it three times?
Are you serious?
I've done it four times, and I think I finished first, second, third, and fourth. I think that's
right.
Wow,
I didn't know that you like to do that.
Yeah, and then I foolishly accepted an invite from Mitsubishi to race professionally for a couple of races.
What?
In their sport truck series, and I raced.
When was this?
This was when I was
April?
23 or 4, something like that. And I raced it. My professional career lasted two races. I raced, or no, three maybe. It was Lime Rock, and then maybe it was two, and then Pocono. And there was a spill in front of me, and this guy was skidding across the track, and I T-boned him. And my car or truck, it was a sport truck, flew up in the air. We were doing about 130. Landed on its roof and skidded to a stop. And the impact was so hard that it sent my front left tire up through the wheel well and broke my left ankle.
Wow.
And after I slid to a stop, I was like, okay, that'll do it for the professional stuff. I'll let my cheesy celeb ass get out of here and let the real men work.
Oh, wow. Wait a second. Wow. I did not know this. I thought I knew everything.
No, there's a whole actual sequential of this crash that National Enquirer got back in the day, which was so great for me because I got to see it because it wasn't televised. You know, it was a silly little race. Anyway.
That's
wild. I didn't even know that you had done this, though. Yeah. That's what's so crazy. I mean, I've spent hours when you and Amanda are away going through your stuff, like in your house. And
wait,
like,
what?
Yeah, and then
why don't you have me on the show? You should have me on the show. Why don't you?
We should have you on the show. Yeah. It'd be great to finally meet the real you.
Hard to schedule.
It is hard to schedule.
Is it?
Yeah.
But how great is Daniel, though? I mean, talk about it does boggle my mind. And I like what you said, Sean, which is like, how do you, what is that feeling that first time going around?
I know, because when you get, that's what I want to experience. I want to do that. What is that when you're allowed to speed?
Right.
right?
Yep.
When you are given permission to go over 100, 10, 20, 30, 50, whatever that is.
I remember Dax flew through Frankfurt, and because he wanted to go to that famous, what's that famous track that you can go to? Like on Sundays, it's open to the public.
The Nürburgring.
Nürburgring. So Dax goes and he rents Hertz. Mm-hmm. He rents a Porsche to pick up at the airport in Frankfurt.
I did the same thing, except I got mine in Monaco and drove it all the way up there.
Which is probably
realized,
was fun.
Realized too late, it was $5 a mile.
Oh, are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow.
True story.
So, wow. Well, at that time, it was probably 5 lira. I mean, think about it if it was you. Right?
It was
a long
time ago.
It was a long time ago.
I paid in spices and rugs.
So Dax lands at Frankfurt and he goes to Avis or Hertz or whatever. And he goes, they give him the keys to the Porsche. And he goes, how do I get to the Nürburgring? And they're like, I'm very sorry, but you cannot take this car on the Nürburgring. Of course, it goes without saying you cannot do this. He goes, oh yeah, no, I'm not going to do it. But anyway, how do I get there? And they're like, we are very serious. You must not take this car on the thing. And he goes, no, I totally won't. But so just tell me which. And of course, he got in it. I think Kay Bell was with him too, and they just drove out there, and he popped on that thing in this rented Porsche. He said it was wild. It was the Sundays open to everybody. He said there were like people going in like trucks with like campers on the back and like, and then like dudes in Maseratis going 200 miles an hour.
It's really cool.
That'd be fun, right? If the three of us went and did that.
Oh my God.
Yeah. We'll save it for the European tour.
Oh yes. For the European. Shh. Oh, not allowed to talk about the European tour
don't
yet.
Don't talk about the European tour.
Don't talk about the European tour.
Wait, are we going to do a domestic tour? What cities? What cities are you guys going to?
We're already doing a domestic tour.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll take this opportunity to remind our listener what cities are you going to?
Sure.
What dates are
Toronto?
Are you
going to
go to Toronto?
I don't know.
Where would you go after Toronto? And what dates are you going to go
to Boston?
Are there any tickets left? Even
I go to New York. There are a few tickets left. Check out smartless.com.
Good. Wait, what?
Merch. Smartless.com.
Can you spell that?
Smartless. SMARTLESS. Smartless.com.
You get some merch.
You get a hoodie.
T-shirts, like a hoodie? Mugs.
Oh, I do love a hoodie. Yeah.
You know what? My favorite thing, though, that he said all the entire interview is, bye, there's the flavor. Bye, there's the flavor.
No, it was there's a flavor. That doesn't count. That doesn't count. No, boom.
Sean, hang on. I got to pause for a second.
Please.
That was so fucking sloppy.
It was sloppy. It was aggressive.
It was aggressive.
Maybe only the fifth word you've said in an hour.
Yeah, like,
you just sitting there fucking cherry picking, waiting to do the buy.
What happened? Did your toaster just go off? Like all of a sudden you had to get out of there?
Yeah.
What the fuck is going on with you?
My Ezekiel bread just went off.
Christ almighty. How about... Instead of, you don't need to do that. If you want to just wrap up, how about just look at us like an adult and just look at both of us and just go, Daniel Ricciardo, it was great for him to be here today, even if it was just a drive. Bye.
Oh, beautiful with the drive and everything.
Ew.
Bye.
Ew.
Drive. Bye.
Smart. Less. Smart. Less.
Smartless is 100% organic and artisanally handcrafted by Michael Grant Terry, Rob Armjarv, and Bennett Barbico. If you like Smartless, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.